Hi, Bill Smaldone. Welcome to KABU again.
Hi, Bill. Great to be back.
Bill Smaldone teaches history at Willamette University in Salem. His books, research, and writing are on modern German history. His books include Confronting Hitler and European Socialism, A Concise History with Documents. In his spare time, he's the founder and still chair of the board of KMUZ Radio, and like KABU here in Portland, KMUZ's in Salem. It's a member-owned and operated, democratically-run radio station, and he's also president of the Willamette University undergraduate faculty. This is Bill Resnick of the Old Mo Variety Hour Collective interviewing Bill Smaldone on whether this world that's in ghastly shape with the planet hurtling toward climate warming cataclysm that climate science says will wipe out most humans if not stopped, that global roasting is caused by human action, can be ameliorated by human action. In fact, science has developed all the means of stopping, reversing that global roasting at modest cost. But little has been done or is planned. Indeed, all the major countries, but perhaps one to be discussed today, nearly all are greatly increasing their military and surveillance budgets, focusing on making war, or all of them say, defending against war. There's only one big shooting war now in Ukraine, but many smaller shooting wars, mostly financed by the richer countries in Yemen and Congo and Ethiopia, Colombia, Myanmar, Syria, also Israel, Palestine. Then there's many military buildups and constant maneuvers and probing between countries, as in Pakistan, India, U.S., China, and the South China Sea, U.S. and Israel versus Iran, North and South Korea, most of them with the U.S. in reserve. But only 9 of those nations have nuclear weapons, the U.S. and Russia, 5,000 apiece. In this sorry picture, the U.S. is, of course, in a class by itself with over 700 military bases around the world, large numbers of secret units, drone wars, too. No one knows how many missions per day they're flying. And we haven't even mentioned the war on the streets in U.S. North America and, of course, in the schools. This is all widely known and in fact, disseminated by peace groups. Yet the peace movement around the world is marginal at best. So, with that, Bill, sorry picture, your job is to shine a ray of hope. Because if there's one country that's somewhat less involved in war and more in modulating the forces of war and also doing more to alleviate climate change, seems to me the country is modern Germany, where you have lived for some time and you study and write about. So, Bill, tell us about Germany's foreign and military policies, especially its relations with the countries involved in the Ukraine war, and, of course, especially this country.
Well, Bill, maybe I should provide an overview of Germany's history of attempting to secure raw materials for itself. The raw material problem is a perpetual problem for Germany, which is a relatively small country compared to the United States. It is about the size of the Pacific Northwest and has 80 million people, right? So it's not very large and it is quite crowded. It has some natural resources. For example, the northwestern areas of Germany, the area in the Ruhr River Valley region, was quite rich in coal deposits, and that allowed Germany to develop energy in the 19th and 20th century that was based on hard coal production. Germany also had quite a bit of brown coal in its eastern provinces, and during the Cold War, the communist state of East Germany was quite reliant on brown coal for all kinds of energy production and also for the production of key products, especially in the chemical industries. Now, why is this important? It's important to note that German industry has long been oriented around exports. So the Germans are renowned for not only having very productive heavy industrial sectors, so the production of things like steel, but also for producing very high quality consumer products, usually produced in small and medium-sized firms, products that require high precision in the production process. And the mixture of German heavy industry, middle-sized precision industry, high quality across the board, all of those things come together to make Germany a very powerful exporter of consumer goods and other kinds of finished products. This has been necessary. That is, it's important for Germany to export those kinds of products because it has to import many of the things that it needs, one, to feed itself, but also to carry out basic industrial production. So Germany has long been oriented around the need to export goods in order to purchase the imports that it needs to feed its population and to provide all the things that a modern industrial society requires. So for a long time, the German state has been, you know, very attuned to making sure that German industry, the German capital, has access to the raw materials it needs, has access to the markets it needs, and so on. And it has pursued various strategies to get those things. So, for example, in the first part of the 20th century, the first half of the 20th century, German governments sought to establish German hegemony in Europe. That is, to subjugate all of the surrounding states, either by force, such as in World War I, or via treaties, bilateral treaties mainly, that provided Germany with an advantage in the acquiring of the raw materials it needed and the markets that its industries needed. So World War I was fought, for example, to allow German capital to establish its domination in Central Europe. Right? The goal was to establish what the Germans called Mitteleuropa, or Central Europe. And by that, they essentially meant that Germany would dominate the whole area from France to Poland, and that it would be basically able to dominate all of its neighbors and to secure for itself the raw materials and markets it needed to develop its economy. So that was essentially the core of the project, right, that was World War I for German capital. And that project, or that effort, was defeated, right, with Germany's defeat in 1918. And then for the interwar period, Germany essentially had to recover from that military defeat, but also it had to get its legs again in terms of its economic equilibrium. So it had lost all of its colonies as a result of the war. Some of the major parts of the country that produced coal, for example, the eastern region of Silesia, was lost to Poland. The Germans were in a rather disadvantageous economic situation during the interwar period, and this fueled the belief by many Germans that it was necessary, in a sense, to resume the effort, right, to reestablish German domination over Europe. And that was essentially what amounted to World War II. So when Hitler launched the Second World War in 1939, one of the goals of the German government, in addition to establishing a new racial order in Europe, annihilating the people that were not regarded as Aryans, but were regarded as subhuman, so for example, Jews and Slavs. In addition to that very large goal, the German regime intended to establish what it called a Großraumwirtschaft area. That means a large economic space, right? Something that could be compared with the continental empire of the United States. And that would allow Germany to establish economic autarky, right? With domestic supplies, full domestic supplies of agricultural and raw materials coming from Eastern Europe, right, fueling German industry back in the home country, so to speak. And so the Germans attempted in the Second World War to conquer all of Europe, to subordinate Western Europe to its economic interests, and to establish a greater German empire in Eastern Europe that would come under the direct control of the regime and that would allow the hyper-exploitation of Eastern Europe's raw material resources. That was also defeated in 1945. So from 1914 to 1945, the German state attempted to secure its economic interests largely by military means. After 1945, as a result of the total defeat of Nazi Germany, German political leaders had to set about establishing different kinds of relations with their neighbors in order to secure their economic interests. Once again, remember, the need to import raw materials that would allow industry to produce the goods that could be exported so that Germany could acquire the materials it needed for a modern economy. This was true both in West Germany, okay, which was that half of Germany that was allied to the Western capitalist countries during the Cold War, and East Germany, which was part of the Soviet-organized Eastern Bloc and had a centrally planned economy. Despite the fact that the Western economy was more market-oriented and the Eastern economy was more state-oriented, by and large, they needed to accomplish the same things, and that is to export finished goods in return for raw materials. One of the interesting things about that, by the way, was that the West Germans had a huge advantage in that almost all of the hard coal reserves were in Western Germany, and hard coal is a superior burning coal that is much more useful to industry than brown coal. And brown coal is what the East Germans had available. The other thing to note is that in the middle of the 20th century, Germany, both West and East, began to undertake a transition to oil use. So they began a gradual shift from dependence on coal to dependence on oil. The problem for both West and East Germany was that neither state had any oil, and so everything had to be imported. And so the Western German economy became very much dependent on imports from places like the Middle East, and Eastern Germany became dependent on imports from the Soviet Union. The East Germans also used oil imports to their advantage on the world market, because they would purchase at below cost oil from the Soviet Union and then sell it on the world capitalist market at world market rates, and they would pocket the difference, and that allowed them to use some of that money, that hard currency earned, to purchase goods that they needed abroad. So energy politics in Germany, West and East, during the Cold War was very important. Both of those states, West and East Germany, were the leading states of their respective blocs. They were producers of a wide range of high-quality industrial and consumer goods. Both of them were major chemical producers. Both of them were heavily dependent on coal resources and oil resources. When Germany was unified in 1990, these dependencies continued. So coal and oil were still really important. Germany remained very much dependent on the imports of those products, especially as local supplies were not enough to satisfy Germany's industrial needs. And so to sum things up, let's just say that in the 20th century, energy politics were extremely important to the health of the German economy, and Germany was hard-pressed to secure adequate supplies of energy in order to meet the industrial needs of the country and also the civilian needs. As Germany urbanized, as Germany became increasingly dependent on things like, you know, mass transit and highly urbanized cities, right, which are very energy intensive, it needed ever more supplies of energy, of raw materials for energy production to meet those needs, the needs of a modern economy. The last thing I'll say is that toward the end of the 20th century, there was increasing recognition within Germany about the environmental damage wrought by industrialization. This was very important to the rise of the Green Movement in West Germany, and it was very important also to the development of a green opposition in East Germany. And this environmental consciousness led to a kind of early realization that Germany's use of energy, that is, the use of coal and oil, was highly destructive to the local and to the global environment. And so the German ecological movement, which is politically represented by the Greens, began to make its mark toward the end of the 20th century and became particularly important in the 21st century within Germany's parliamentary system. And this has forced all the other political parties, including the center-right parties like the Christian Democrats, to recognize the importance of environmental issues, to recognize the importance of the energy sector and the need to move toward more sustainable sources of energy, such as solar and wind. And the Germans, beginning in the 1990s, I would say, launched a series of efforts to make their energy use more sustainable, and in doing so, have catapulted Germany into the leadership of the European Union and have transformed the state into a global leader in the transition to renewable energy. They have long ago left the United States in the dust. For a while, the United States was sort of the model, you know, based on the creation of the EPA in 1972 and the well-deserved reputation for American ecological activists, right, for leading the charge in the late 20th century toward a more sustainable economy or a more sustainable environmental policy. The Germans saw that from afar, and they jumped on the bandwagon and have now left the Americans, I would say, well behind.
This is KABU Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Bill Smaldone, Willamette University historian, wrote the books Confronting Hitler and European Socialism, A Concise History with Documents. We've been discussing the history of Germany, a very highly populated country with needs for goods from overseas. It developed an export economy of precision goods, sells all over the world, and then, in fact, became environmentally conscious in the 20th century and have left any other country way behind in terms of responding to climate change and reducing their greenhouse gas pollution. Bill, let's talk about now the Ukraine. Any war, of course, would be a country like Germany, of course, who lost two wars, sacrificed millions and millions of people, was bombed to death by the United Kingdom and the United States, who took vengeance on European cities and destroyed a number of medieval cities in Europe, spared a few, actually. In any event, they had terrible war experiences on the one hand, and they had needs to have friendly relations with economies all over the world, like China, who is deeply involved in the Ukraine war. China and Russia are allies. China, of course, is an economic powerhouse. Russia's a basket case. Russia really can't do anything without China's approval, and they obviously did approve. So in that situation, it seems to me having good relations with China because of trade would tell us how this impacted their behavior with regard to the Ukraine. And war is just terrible for an economy that exports and imports because the trade routes are blocked. The production of food in the world is now in bad shape. They're really threatened. Why don't you talk about that?
So let me be very clear. Let me say that during the Cold War, I noted that West Germany became the leading state of Western Europe among the capitalist countries, and East Germany became the most important economic driver of the East Bloc economy. And by that, I mean that both states, in a sense, could dominate their neighbors. They were able to increase exports into those regions, right, and to become a major supplier of all kinds of industrial and consumer goods. When the Cold War ended, a giant vacuum was created in Eastern Europe, into which, because the Soviet Union collapsed, right, and East Germany collapsed. And so somebody was going to have to go in there and pick up the threads, right, of the trading connections, the supply routes, all of the flow of goods and services in the region had to be reconfigured. And Germany was in an excellent position to move into that vacuum. And so East Germany's dominance gave way to the dominance really of Germany as a whole in Eastern Europe. German capital flowed into the region. Many German corporations located new production facilities in the East. They either bought up old production facilities and renovated them or closed them down, or they established new facilities in the East. One of the best examples of that is Volkswagen, which became a major auto producer in places like the Czech Republic. And so German capital flowed into Eastern Europe, and one has to understand that as NATO moved eastward, right, as the Western military alliance expanded over the course of two decades into Eastern Europe and absorbed into its ranks countries like Poland and the Baltic states, Czechoslovakia and Hungary and the Balkans, simultaneously, right, those states were drawn into the European Union trading networks. Okay, they became eventually a part of the European Union political bloc. And so you have being formed in Eastern Europe, a European Union, right, in which the German economy stands at the center. It's the most important economy in the whole of the EU. Germany, therefore, is also a very powerful political player, right? And one of the German political goals in the last 20 years, actually longer, since 1990, has been to promote strong economic ties with the former Soviet Union, right, with Russia and with the other countries in the region in order to secure the kinds of raw materials that it had, that has long needed. So, for example, Germany in the 20th century became increasingly dependent on oil and gas imports. Russia is a huge producer of oil and gas. Newly united Germany, therefore, was quite ready and willing to trade with Russia, to ship Russia industrial products, finished goods, in return for larger and larger imports of gas and oil, conveyed to Germany not only by ship, but also by pipelines that crossed countries like Ukraine, and most recently that were built under the surface of the Baltic Sea, coming directly into German markets. And so Germany, you know, the Cold War was over. Germany expanded its reach into Eastern Europe, both economic and political. It promoted closer and closer relations with Russia and its satellite states in the region.
Hi, folks. You just heard me, Bill Resnick, talking to Bill Smaldone, a historian of modern Germany at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon. Bill Smaldone co-founded KMUZ Radio and is president of the board. His books include Confronting Hitler and A Concise History of European Socialism. Today's was the first part of a two-part interview that discusses how Germany could lead the world in transforming their respective economies. In part one, Bill Smaldone pointed out that Germany's geography and demography dictated an economy depending on export and import. And that required an internationalist perspective. Of course, only after losing two world wars. In part two to play next week, Monday, on the Old Mole, Bill and I will point out that Germany is well positioned to lead that international mobilization to stop global roasting and show why that's possible.